Hey, what you're about to listen to is the podcast version of what was a live radio segment on KPFA. Consequently, when you hear us give out a call-in number, you don't want to call it. If you're listening to this as a podcast, it is already too late, and nobody on the other end of that phone number is going to have any useful answers for you. Let's go to the show. We're going to try to turn, as we do most weeks at this time, to new developments in the world of COVID-19 and other public health menaces. Our guest is Dr. John Swartzberg, clinical professor emeritus of infectious diseases at UC Berkeley School of Public Health. Good morning, Dr. Swartzberg.
Good morning. Sorry for the audible problems.
Well, they were inaudible problems, as luck would have it. Good to have you back with us.
Thank you.
I wanted to start with the big vaccine news over the course of the past week. A bit of a roller coaster for Moderna, a newish company that has staked its claim to wealth on producing mRNA platform vaccines. Moderna was trying to develop and get approved a new influenza vaccine, conducted trials, submitted all its paperwork to the FDA. The Trump FDA decided that they weren't going to consider the application, whereupon Moderna announced that it was going to cancel research and development on a number of other vaccines for other conditions, anticipating that nothing would be able to get to market. And some days later, the Trump administration reversed course, and now they are considering it. I thought we should maybe start with the public health basics. So we already have an influenza vaccine. What would be different or better about Moderna's vaccine if it lives up to the claims that the manufacturer is making about its properties?
Sure. The Moderna vaccine is an mRNA vaccine. Currently, the influenza vaccines we use do not use mRNA technology. And they're, generally speaking, two advantages of mRNA technology. One is that you may get a better immune response. But the more important one is that you can make these vaccines in a couple months and have them in people's arms, which means that you can make a vaccine that's directed against the most likely type of influenza that's going to be circulating. Some of your listeners may recall that this year we based our vaccine on a type of influenza called influenza A, and it was subtype J. And then we found that in late spring, the influenza virus had changed to subtype K, so it was a little bit different, but our vaccines were directed against the older one. So we were worried that the vaccines wouldn't be as effective. I think in retrospect, they may be just as effective, but we'll find out in a few months. If we had the mRNA vaccine from Moderna or any other company, we could have started producing the vaccine in August or maybe July and have it in people's arms by the fall. So we would have had a much more updated vaccine. That's really the big advantage of mRNA technology in regards to the influenza vaccine. Getting to the specifics of this instance, it was chaos. And it's chaos because, like everything in the Trump administration, decisions are made on ideology or dollars and not on science. So what happened here was that a few years ago, I think 2 or 3 years ago, Moderna proposed the study to look at an influenza vaccine based on mRNA. And the FDA signed off on that study. Moderna recruited 40,000+ people in the study, most of whom were in Western Europe, but not everybody. And Moderna sent updates along the way to the FDA, and the FDA would sign off on each of those. Moderna completed the study, submitted their data, and the FDA, under the direction of one of the FDA's, the person in charge of vaccines at the FDA, Vinay Prasad, he made the decision in contradistinction to the advice of the scientists at the FDA that he wasn't going to even review Moderna's final study data, which essentially never occurs. The only time it occurs, which is roughly about 4% of all final applications, is when there's a real problem with the study. There were no problems with the study, to the best of our knowledge. The problem was that Prasad, surely under the dictates of the head of the FDA, decided against his own scientists that they weren't going to review it. That was the decision made, what, about 10, 12 days ago? Then 6 days later...
Well, he did give a reason. So my understanding is the reason he gave is that Moderna's trial tested its new mRNA flu vaccine against the regular flu vaccine, not the enhanced dose that is given to older people over the age of 65. He said it should have been compared to the most effective vaccine available, which would be that one, not the most commonly used. Is there any merit to that?
No, there's not. If there was merit to it, the FDA would never have had the study signed off on the study in the first place, nor signed off at the various stages that Moderna would send in their data. So this was the first time that that decision was made, again, against the advice of his own scientists. The second problem with that argument is that Moderna did study it in a small group of people, around 3,000 people, where it showed increased effectiveness for older people. What Prasad was saying, and what you were just saying, Brian, was that the vaccine should have been tested against a vaccine typically used for older people that has more antigen in it, more powerful. That's what we use, for example, for people over 65. The problem with that, and the reason why it wasn't done, because most of Western Europe doesn't use that vaccine. They use the more standard vaccine. So those, I think, are the major arguments against what Prasad's decision was. I don't think there's any question that this decision was not based upon science, and Prasad was hiding behind this idea of gold standard science. That just wasn't the case. Why did it get reversed? I can only speculate. I'm sure that Prasad was told to reverse it because he had made the decision. He was told to reverse it by McCarry, who's in charge of the FDA. I'm sure McCarry wouldn't have done that unless he was told to reverse it. And the only person who would have told him, the person who would have told him to reverse it would be RFK Jr. And I doubt he would have done it. So the only other person who could have told him to reverse it would have been directly through Trump.
Do you think that's because Moderna has the phone number of someone useful at the White House, or because the administration is generally afraid of the consequences of shutting down vaccine development?
The latter. I've not seen any example of Trump's decision-making based upon what's best for the American people or based upon science. It was based on his concerns with the enormous pushback that he got. Enormous pushback.
Moderna has been working on a number of other vaccines. Among the vaccines they said they would halt research and development on if it looked like it was impossible to get anything approved, a vaccine for Epstein-Barr. This is the virus that a lot of people know as causing mononucleosis, but more recently, latent Epstein-Barr infection has been pretty conclusively linked to multiple sclerosis later in life, a massive contributor to chronic disease. It would be a big public health win if a vaccine could take Epstein-Barr out of circulation.
Yeah. You know, the concern about this tempest that we're going through with Moderna's application for the influenza vaccine is somewhat about the influenza vaccine for this year. But the big concern is if you're making investing a great deal of money in innovative ways to produce vaccines, and you see the FDA responding like this, you're going to think twice about producing your RNA vaccines. And that's the real big concern. That's why decisions from these regulatory agencies have to be based upon science and not ideology. Specifically about Epstein-Barr, it would be wonderful to have a vaccine against this. Epstein-Barr virus causes mononucleosis. Epstein-Barr virus is associated with several serious, often life-threatening malignancies. So to have a vaccine against Epstein-Barr for those reasons would be wonderful. And there is a strong association with Epstein-Barr virus infection and the development of multiple sclerosis. Whether there's causality there or whether there's just the association, still people argue about, but the bulk of the science today suggests there's something more than just an association. So a vaccine against this virus that infects roughly about 80-85% of the American population by the time they become adults, to have a vaccine against this virus would be wonderful. And to see innovative vaccine creation stifled by ideology is very, very frustrating.
All right, Dr. Swartzberg, let's try to get to one listener question before we sign off. We won't take calls this morning because I got to keep the phone lines open for fundraising. But from the inbox, someone who did not list their name or city at the bottom of their email wrote to say, my daughter and her 5-year-old son in Washington State recently got flu A. That is influenza A. They had both been vaccinated for influenza. My question is, do they now have any increased immunity to influenza A if they were exposed after this infection?
Well, having had the infection with influenza A is a good way to be immunized. Whether they have increased immunity because they also were vaccinated, I don't think we can really answer that question. I think that she has to just assume that her 5-year-old son has very good immunity now against influenza, and that immunity will last for a few months, taking the son through the influenza season. It's an opportunity to mention about influenza, and that is that our immunity, like with against COVID, is unfortunately short-lived, whether it's by vaccine or by infection. But and the vaccine is only about 40-50%, maybe 60%, depending upon the year, effective against preventing people from getting sick. But it does protect a great deal against how sick you get if you do get sick. And we've had more pediatric deaths from influenza this year than we typically see.
Been a bad flu season so far. About 20,000 deaths overall, as I understand.
Yeah, and this is not a horrible influenza season and not a real good one. Deaths range in the United States from 15,000 on the low side every year to up to 40,000-50,000, sometimes even more, 60,000.
All right. Dr. Swartzberg, we should leave it there for this week. I got to spend a few minutes raising money for the radio station. Thank you so much for spending another Monday morning with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, that does it for this week's edition of Corona Calls. If you want to send in a question for next week's, you can email coronacalls@kpfa.org. Or tune in live to Call In Live. Usually we air Monday mornings right after 7:30 news headlines on KPFA 94.1 FM in the Bay Area or kpfa.org anywhere in the world. We put a little bit of extra work into repackaging this live segment as a podcast because it feels like the information is useful to a lot of people. And we ought to make it accessible through as many channels as possible. If you'd like to help us get the word out by rating and reviewing it in whatever app you're using to listen. And if you want to pitch in some cash, we wouldn't say no. We always take donations at kpfa.org. I'd appreciate it if you mentioned Corona Calls when you make your pledge. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiegert. I hope you have a great week. Stay well. We'll talk to you next time.